Welcome back to Wellness Weekly. I'm your co-host, Nora.
And I'm your co-host, Isabel. In Wellness Weekly, we like to be real and dive deep into topics that we want to make mainstream when it comes to wellness and health.
We want this podcast to be a safe space for everybody, and we're so happy you're here. Everyone, it's your co-host Nora
and Isabel.
We kicked off this quarter with quite the intense but absolutely necessary conversation that we had with Melody Lee about all the issues that exist in the current therapy industry. And, you know, we kind of have been on this wave of dismantling capitalism and unrealistic productivity standards and, you know, breaking down the therapeutic industry and its lack of inclusivity. And we've been on this wave for a hot minute. So for this episode, we thought it would be a good idea to drop down the beat and slow it a little bit and just do one of our episodes where me and Isabella have a nice, honest, and raw conversation about our episode topic this week, which is going to be the mental health challenges of adjusting back to in-person classes.
Yeah, thank you so much for the intro, Nora. Before we get started on our episode, a quick shout out to our sponsor of today's episode, Elm Coffee Roasters. Elm Coffee Roasters open in Pioneer Square in South Lake Union for takeout and soon indoor seating. Order coffee and more at elmcoffeeroasters.com.
All right. So we kind of, when we started like classes, we kind of realize that there's going to be an adjustment period for everybody. And it's not like everybody has acknowledged it. Like, that's what I've noticed. What I noticed is that everybody moved on and pretended like we've been doing this for the past, like we haven't had a break from like in-person classes. You know what I mean? So this is like on the surface level, these are some of the kind of obvious challenges that we've had, which is like the adjustment period for everybody. But it doesn't seem like anybody's talking about it or even acknowledging it.
Mm-hmm. You're right, because we were in the pandemic for so long that, I mean, for better or for worse, a lot of us got really, really used to attending school online. And it can feel kind of blindsiding when you go from a format that you're really used to all of a sudden everything feeling kind of topsy-turvy. Such an adjustment. And I feel as though because we're back to, you know, where we were pre-pandemic, it's a little bit harder for a lot of people to talk about the fact that this still is a very transitional phase. Obviously, it's so different from when we were first adjusting to online learning, but it still can be quite jarring nonetheless.
Right. Yeah. I like what you said that, you know, we do acknowledge that it's different from what it was like adjusting to online learning. But I think that also gives it its own unique mental health challenges. Some of the things could include just general, like an anxiety induced by all of the unknown, like all of the unknown aspects of the adjustment period, and just like being generally higher, like having higher levels of an anxiety due to having a few things out of your control, like who gets sick, if your class is, you know, clear from COVID, if your class is in, you know, what kind of, just if you're going to get COVID, if you aren't, this is kind of also honestly out of your hand, which we're going to get to talk about a little later. But yeah, but this anxiety thing also plays into your social stamina and skills, I feel like. What do you think?
I definitely agree. I think it's so sad to say, but I almost got used to interacting with people through Zoom and in breakout rooms. And so for me, it's been kind of weird interacting with people with masks on in person, because there are, like, I kind of got used to not receiving as much body language cues information through Zoom and online learning when you can like just see people's faces basically. But I didn't get used to, or I never fully got used to the idea of doing school with masks on and not being able to hear people as well, not being able to see the full extent of people's facial expressions. It just feels a little strange. And I think it requires definitely a certain level of adaptability.
Right. I think we talked a little bit about this before, but it's kind of like your social muscle needs to be trained again. It's kind of like hasn't been as, or kind of like has been trained to like work in a different way. And then now you're needing to relearn some social skills or learn even new ones with the challenges that reading body language presents with face masks. So I totally agree. I feel like as an introvert, this has definitely has been something that I'm needing to work on. And I feel like a lot of people are feeling this way as well, because I could see, like, you know, when a professor like asks a question in the class, there's just like dead silence for a few seconds. Mm-hmm. And just the same way that it happens on Zoom, you know, mm-hmm. It's just, you know, people taking a minute, and it's just like, I feel like I could feel the energy being like socially not the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I was thinking when I was like reflecting on this, I had a question come up, which is, you know, so there's this unrealistic expectation of being able to bounce back to like your social skills, and you're just being on top of it and just knowing how to navigate this adjustment period. And one thing that I wanted to think about more is, how could this be triggering mental health-wise in ways other than in anxiety and social stamina?
That's a really good question. I think for me, just drawing from my own experience, I got so used to having so few places to go that now that I have many more places I can go study, it doesn't feel right to me anymore. It feels surreal. And that kind of brings me discomfort when I am studying somewhere that's not, you know, my apartment, or I'm going places that just weren't an option before the pandemic. And so kind of having this freedom, but feeling a lot of mental constraints around the freedom is very disconcerting. And it kind of reminds me of how I felt during the pandemic, almost every time those options are presented and my brain goes, wait, no, you can't do that.
Oh my God. No, absolutely. I relate to that a lot. Like, it's just, there is so many options. Like, I could go to Suzlo, I could go to Odegaard. There are just, you know, there are so many like buildings that you could go study in, but it just doesn't feel as comfortable. It doesn't feel as, it just, there's like a new introduced sense of an anxiety mm-hmm. that I didn't used to have when I would go to like study before. So I 100% agree. I feel more comfortable studying at home, which was actually the opposite case for me before the pandemic. Like,
me
I would
too.
Want, yes, I would feel like, oh, like I'm in the headspace to study. If I'm in the library, I'm in the, you know, like I need to be out of my apartment because that's where I rest and sleep. But now it's kind of flipped. And I don't know if I feel more, I don't know if I feel comfortable studying in the library anymore. It's weird.
And yes. there's also just such a looming kind of sense of impending doom with, we don't know if UW will stay in person. We don't know to what degree cases will spike, and they are spiking, and that's really scary. I mean, the vaccines are amazing, obviously, but they're not a complete blanket pandemic ending solution. And I think we have a lot of the freedoms that we did have pre-pandemic, but we have so much of the uncertainties that, you know, started March 2020 and have not gone away despite the vaccination. I guess something I'm curious about for you have been tools to work through certain, I guess you could almost say like adjustment fatigue or anxieties around adjusting back to in person.
Yeah, I think talking about it is a big one for me, which is why we're doing this episode, right? talking about it with people and acknowledging it. I remember I had a couple of conversations with different people in different classes where we just like got to rant together, even though like I don't even know these people. They're basically classmates. And we just got to talk a little bit about just, you know, how all of this feels and trying to build a sense of community despite, you know, all of the things that are hindering it. And so this also kind of helps in making study groups, because the people that I got to talk with, I got to form study groups with, which is really nice, because it, like, the fact that I got to form study groups with them was really nice in a natural, organic way, was really nice, because there's like a social aspect that's taken care of for me, instead of having to go out of my comfort zone and ask random people to form study groups, when it just naturally and organically happens through having these conversations and connecting with people. So, and this is kind of actually the other thing that I was going to say that helps. I think if you do study groups, it maybe forces you to not study in your apartment and have to like meet up with people if they're into that, if they're into like meeting up in a library or something. And so when you meet up in a library, that kind of slowly but surely reintroduces the comfort feeling of studying in a library and just getting comfortable and feeling like, yeah, this is the headspace where I feel comfortable studying. Yeah, I think these are the ones that pop in. These are like some of the main ones that I have noticed that helped me kind of readjust. Do you have any?
Ooh, I don't have any that I think are super set in stone, but for me, I think what's helped a lot has just been kind of reminding myself what I really, really liked and what I missed about campus, like doing little things throughout the day that kind of are comforting, like getting a drink at a coffee shop I used to go to all the time, or going back to a study area that I used to find I was like really, really productive when I was working there. And I feel like campus feels both the same and so incredibly different all at the same time. And so I've just been, yeah, kind of like finding the joys in familiarity and also finding like some joys in a lot of people being super enthusiastic about connecting and reconnecting.
I was going to say, comment on something you said earlier about just like navigating all of the uncertainties. It seems to be like a really common concern, actually, as far as I've noticed. A lot of people were talking about people testing positive in their classes, mm-hmm. and how that is making them feel, what kind of things are happening in that class environment, and how the class environment changes when somebody tests positive. I've also heard or read stories on the other side of it, where somebody, a student, tests positive and how they feel and how it impacts their ability to approach like this quarter in a productive way, and just and how it affects their mental health. So somebody on the UW Reddit was talking about how they tested positive, and they were talking about all of the emotions that were just coming up as a result of that, and talking about how they feel really guilty, and they really feel saddened that even though they took all of their precautions, and you know, they even listed out all the precautions they did, and just being super like respectful of other people's spaces and respectful of the guidelines, and they still caught the virus, which is what we were going to say, is there's so many things that are out of your hand. Like, even if you're doing all of the right things and following the guidelines, you could still get COVID, and then it affects your mental health, let alone your physical health, obviously. But when it affects your mental health in a way that you feel guilty and you feel like you're contributing to like negativity, or that you're making other people feel anxious or whatever it is, it's a very hard and unique mental space that I don't think anyone has ever like needed to navigate before. You know, like, how are you supposed to, like, obviously nobody wants anyone to feel guilty. Like, no, you did the best that you could, and this is out of your hand, and you should not feel like you're responsible for getting infected. It's literally out of your hand, you know? But just seeing how people are interacting with each other and just how this could affect your mental health, it's just, it makes me really, I don't know, how do I describe it? Help me out.
I guess for me, I guess I would imagine it would be really defeating. Like, you already have to quarantine for 2 weeks and, you know, go through all your close contacts and alert a bunch of people, alert UW. And then there's the added, oh my goodness, I'm contributing to the pandemic. And I mean, like, of course, notwithstanding the people who are like deliberately taking a ton of risks and testing positive and still going to class, not counting those people.
I was going to say there is.
I have heard there are people who are getting COVID and going to class knowing they have a positive test. But at the same time, I feel like I have to also acknowledge the fact that so many employers are so strict and so many classes are really, really strict about attendance and about, like, say, taking an in-person test, that even a student who really does not want to get anyone else sick, or an employee who really does not want to get anyone else sick, might feel very, very compelled to come into work or class, just sheer necessity.
Yeah, but, no. But I like how you described it. You feel defeated. And I think that that is not a good mental health. That's not a good mental state to be in,
no.
Especially if you did nothing wrong. And so I think I'm curious to hear about your classes, because I've seen, so most of my classes, actually all of my classes, they implemented like really nice and straightforward way of just approaching what happens if somebody is sick, what happens if you are sick during a midterm season, what happens if you're sick during a class, during quiz, during blah, 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 whatever it is, because their different classes have different components to them. But most of my classes, they did a really good job. And I just have so much respect for the professors for putting in the work to make sure that everything is covered when it comes to this aspect, because they really made sure that you're not missing out on anything if you don't show up to class because you're quarantining or because you're sick. And I think that this is a really positive thing that I wanted to highlight, which brings us back to the point that you said, where if people are still sick and they show up, it's like, I'm curious to know if other classes have the same kind of regulation, or if it's less organized, you know, just what the general status is.
Mm-hmm. I had a professor actually who initially offered to hold like an in-person and a Zoom course, the same class, but teaching it twice, which I think was a really, really generous offer. There ended up not being a whole lot of people who wanted to do virtual, so she ended up canceling that. But I think the kind of hybrid, you pick whichever format you work best, is something a fair number of professors are doing. And for all my classes, they're pretty small and there's not a super strict policy, but I know a lot of professors are recording lectures and making themselves available for like virtual office hours and that sort of thing should students get sick. But I guess something that I think is also important to talk about is accessibility challenges, because for some professors, you can't really get accommodations unless you go through the DRS. But now you mentioned that it's taking up to a month and a half to get accommodations reviewed and approved. And so I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on this process and how you think it might impact students, you know, who for many, many different reasons are requesting accessibility accommodations?
Yeah, totally. I definitely wanted to bring this up because I've seen that how the DRS is transitioning back to their offices and transitioning back to their services in person, because for the entirety of the pandemic, they mostly have been operating, they entirely have been operating online, and they have a shortage of staff right now. I think people got out, the DRS sent out an email to students that was like, hey, just a heads up that we're really like overwhelmed right now. There's a lot of requests. And so if you're a new student requesting accommodations, you're probably going to get delayed, like you said, before you get your accommodations reviewed. And even if you are an existing student requesting new accommodations, you are still going to have some trouble getting those approved and getting those in line for you. And I'm sure that that's like, I'm imagining myself, if I'm in that situation, I would feel really anxious. I would feel just like completely, it's honestly like you're kind of helpless in this situation. Like there's not much that you can do, you know, if you need accommodations and they don't have the staff to process your application or whatever it is, it just builds into an anxiety that's induced by uncertainty and induced by things that are out of your hand. So it's just one more thing that is just, I think a lot of, I heard that in the DRS, they are needing a lot more advisors to hire more advisors. And this just doesn't even cover the extent of things that they're still working on adjusting and getting back up. And so I think this is one like administrative part that UW maybe needs to put more funding and needs to put just more focus on providing whatever it takes to get less problems and more smooth transition for the DRS, because this is a pretty big school and a lot of students for the widest range of needs have different accessibility needs that they need to be accommodated. And it's just, if you're having to wait for 4 to 6 weeks, that is like 4 weeks out from the end of the quarter, or, you know, it's basically just unrealistic. So this is us calling out for UW to take some accountability here and do their best in supporting the DRS, so that the DRS can support students appropriately.
As a student with very frequent migraines, I've actually been trying to get DRS accommodations because I recognize at the beginning of the quarter, it's been going on long enough. It has a very real impact on my ability to do my schoolwork. And so I've been trying to get accommodations, but I talked to one professor and basically, it just seemed kind of like if I can't go through the DRS, I won't be supported or I won't be able to get certain accommodations that I might need when I'm having like a particularly bad migraine week. And it really sucks. It's really maddening. And the whole process is like about to give me a migraine, basically. I just wish we lived in a world where students would always be taken at their word in terms of, hey, I have this issue, they shouldn't really feel the need to go into a lot of detail about it if they don't want to. But I wish we lived in a world where any student who is like, hey, I have this condition or this issue or like whatever it may be, would just be able to be taken at face value and get accommodations they need instead of having to go through a very bureaucratic process that takes a lot of time and is very draining. So I think for professors, yeah, the most supported I've felt at UW has really been when professors are like, no, I don't need a doctor's note. No, I don't need any formal medical documentation. I fully believe you and just let me know what you need from me. That's been really helpful.
Right. At the end of the day, we're people. We're not, at the end of the day, our identities are like at the core of being human beings and not students. Like we are students part-time, you know, even if you are a full-time student, it's still like a very relatively marginal identity of who you are. And sometimes you just need the professors to talk to you as a human, not as a student. And I 100% relate to that feeling as well. And I think this is something that we definitely need to talk more about in future episodes, because just getting the whole process, as you called it, bureaucratic, of getting DRS accommodations is really, really sophisticated and really difficult, especially when it comes to mental health problems. Especially, it's a lot more complicated. Like you need documentation to prove that you have mental health struggles. And it's like, this is kind of questionable because everybody has mental health struggles and everybody should have mental health support when they need it. If they tell you that they're mentally struggling, you know, like you shouldn't have this much invalidation from you know, whatever institution that you're working with. And so I totally understand, because I also do think that the majority of professors will tell you, oh, like, I can't help you if you don't have a DRS, if you can't prove that you're mentally ill.
It's awful.
You have migraines. If you can't prove that, you can't tell me with like papers and, you know, and it's like, it gets into the whole, like, also like lack of accessibility in the health field, because who can even get a diagnosis? Who can get like a doctor's note? Not everybody can, you know? So it's just a very like, it's just, I don't even know how to describe it, but it's complicit in a number of different classist things, where it's, that's what I was trying to say. Like, it's classist a little bit, and it's just, there are so many issues with it. And I think we need to dive in deep a little bit more and just call out UW on the things that they need to be fixing.
Absolutely. Future episode. Yeah. I think we have so much material, so many jumping off points for a future episode. I'm very excited to roast you, Deb. Really quickly, here's the second word from our sponsor. Open since 2015, Elm Coffee Roasters is devoted to high-quality coffee that's easy to brew at home and a joy to drink. At our roastery and cafe in Pioneer Square, Seattle, Elm obsessively roasts small batches of coffee that they source with a focus on sustainable practices that lift up the whole supply chain and protect the future of the coffee plant. Elm's goal is to make a truly exceptional cup of coffee, an experience you look forward to every day. Cafes in Pioneer Square and South Lake Union open now for takeout and soon dine-in service. Please use code PODCAST at elmcoffeeroasters.com for 15% off your next coffee order. I might try that out. Thank you so much, Elm. We really appreciate it. Thank you, everyone, so much for listening. Again, we really appreciate your listenership, and we are so grateful and so happy to be back.
Thank you for tuning in.
We are really looking forward to having you back on our next episode, and we hope that this week you find a way to take care of yourselves, whatever that looks like for you. Bye, everyone.